Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
Matt Nagy, there were some adjustments that he made to the system to try and bring balance to the offense, but it wasn't balanced to the way the quarterback was tasked with doing it. I don't believe they felt like Mitch was worthy of them adjusting the system to suit him. It delayed this entire process.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
Khalil Mack, he's fast, he's ferocious. When Mack is coming from the backside, then he's a guy who can make a game-changing, game-altering sort of tackle, where if an Anthony Herron is chasing from the backside, all right, you may get tripped up on your ankles, but you're not necessarily as worried about some sort of a strip or takeaway happening.
Co-host of the Score post-game show with Olin Krutz.
I think Matt Nagy knows he needs to win some damn games.
Big Ant Herron with Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Anthony Herron, among his many jobs, is part of the post-game show here at The Score, Big Ten Network, Fox Kickoff, Sirius XM, NBC Sports. How many jobs you got, man? He joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. He's on Twitter at Big Ant Herron. You can also check him out on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Anthony, how are you, man?
Daniel, Layla, I am maybe not spectacular, but outstanding, perhaps. I mean, doing well. And it just kind of easing, sort of gliding my way into the time of year where there is less football to discuss, certainly less football film, or film, as one of my old defensive coaches used to pronounce it, that I have to break down on a nightly basis. So, you know, it just means there's more stuff I got to do around the house now.
I saw you, the electrician, if I saw this correctly, that you replaced the light switch?
I did. I was very proud of myself. I was so pleased with myself. It could be the most mundane task. I changed two light bulbs last night. I had to get the ladder out, get up to our giant ceiling to change a couple of light bulbs, change the light switch yesterday. The refrigerator awaits where the water dispenser has decided it's not going to work for the second time in the last couple of years. And it takes me a lot longer to do some of these things than it should, but by the time I have completed the task, I feel like I am Ant the Tool Man Taylor. I'm walking around the house grunting. You know, I can't wait to have a beer, even though I'm not really a beer drinker. I just, you know, I feel like I've done something worthy of a tool belt and some sort of a manly, just a small patch of hair on my chest. Not a full deal, but just something that seems like I've earned my man card.
It's an award. It's a major award.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Yes, I'm still exactly laughing at you. I love that song "Never Scared" by Bone Crusher so much, and it's just like the international pregame song for warmups.
Right.
And like Ann and I are just like half dancing the whole time in our chairs, and poor Dan's probably like, well, "What are you two doing?"
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit much, but I agree. It gets me ready for this segment. Every time I'm coming on this show, I know it is game time.
What was your
pregame warm-up?
What's your takeaway from the full picture of Bears spin of the retention of Pace and Nagy, that we had the 87 minutes and then we had yesterday's George McCaskey tour, and they really believe this stuff they're saying?
I mean, they believe they didn't want to fire Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy, which, you know, after they won those three games in a row, that to me, certainly with Matt Nagy, and then once they officially qualified for the playoffs, then I thought likely with Ryan Pace as well was where this was going to end up. And there aren't great answers for it that are available to give aside from just saying, this is what we want to do. You know, so, I mean, I think they're trying to be careful with their language, which I get it. That's unsurprising as well, because you don't want to put definitive thresholds on things, because folks, and especially here in Chicago media, we got great folks who cover these things. They will hold you to account when you put definitive thresholds on things, whether pro or con, later on. If it worked out, or if it didn't work out, or if you decided to go a different direction with it afterwards. One thing that does stand out to me, though, is I think the discussion, the notion of having like an additional quote-unquote football guy in the process, I don't know that the amount of football guys they have in their process right now is incorrect or is that unique or different from how most other NFL teams are set up. Like, unless you're Jerry Jones, that there's someone at the top of the food chain in the organization who's not going to be a football guy. Normally your GM is the highest ranking football guy within your football organization. And then from there, ownership just does what they can to try and evaluate if they have the right senior executives in place. Normally that's based on wins and losses and the process that they feel goes on from there. So I don't know. I'm not saying that if adding another football guy, quote unquote, would be a bad thing, but the fact that there's not one in place, I don't think is this sort of inexcusable thing from the Bears, because that's how most teams are set up.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd call Jerry Jones much of a football guy. I think he's always had to get a head coach who had a hand in the personnel to actually do anything. But you're a guy who, you know, when you're in the room every day and you hear coaches and officials say things to the public that they are describing a situation, but they can't really say what's going on. And that's how I felt like a whole lot of that Bears press conference was. We all have decided, yeah, they really like Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. That right. goes without saying at this point. Was there anything else where you thought to yourself, oh, they're really wanting to say this probably, but they just can't? Because you know that contrast better than all of us.
They seemingly would like to move on from Mitch, but I think that's part of where their language was very careful as well, where they're willing to note that they need more from the quarterback position. The team as a whole obviously needs to improve, but specifically at quarterback, there's going to be options on the table. They're in a position right now, though, where they don't have all the cap space in the world. They don't have all the draft capital in the world to really make a lot of different machinations happen. So the quarterback world is not their oyster right now. So I think they're realizing internally, and especially when you add in that a certain brand of offense obviously suited Mitch better at the end of the season. To me, it is something that could be viewed as somewhat damning to Matt Nagy, that it finally got to that point that a lot of us had spoken about, where you finally put Mitch in a system that suits him better, and he performed better. He didn't look like a top-flight quarterback in the league, but he looked like a quarterback you could win with. And so right now, there's still a scenario that could play out where Mitch ends up being their best option at quarterback going into this offseason. And if that's the case, that's why Ryan Pace was careful not to just like shut the door or slam the door on the Mitch Trubisky era. And he chose his words pretty carefully with that. I certainly don't get the indication they're hoping that that's the case. I think they would like to upgrade that spot and preferably do it with a veteran, because I do think that this will view this as a, you know, as a win or else type of scenario for next season. But it may be Mitch who's the guy that kind of sets them up better for that than someone else who they just don't have the resources to go get.
Let me do a little exercise here where I put on the Matt Nagy visor. I'm going to think like Matt Nagy as we know him now, 3 years in. And I think I've got a pretty good head to do this little Vulcan mind meld here.
All right, color me curious.
I'm done with Mitch. I've seen it. I've tried. Live long and prosper. Which, by the way, is a great history of this little Vulcan sign here, which is it's ancient. It's the Kohanim, the ancient Hebrew priests. It's a Hebrew letter.
Philip Bernstein rabbit hole coming on that.
Okay, Leonard Nimoy brought that in because he knew
really?
About it. Oh yeah, okay. This is when you're bar mitzvahed and the rabbi puts his hands on your head. He makes this sign for a reason. It comes with the ancient high priests. Where was I? So the Vulcan mind meld. Matt Nagy thinks his offense works, and Layla does too, by the way. So Nagy's thinking, you know, all the reasons why we decided on Foles. Foles is still here. We couldn't block it, and that was the problem. The only reason that stuff didn't work was we didn't get it blocked. But now we've got a line. James Daniels is coming back. We may have something in Mustafa. We're going to be able to shore up what's going on. If Fetty wasn't terrible at right tackle, this all could be fine. That this play and that play and touchdown,
we'll be
touchdown,
even more
touchdown.
Collaborative next year.
Yes, we'll be collaborative. Our wonderful culture. There's no way, as confident as that guy is, as confident as Matt Nagy is, I know he sees something beyond. And I know that he knows it's not Mitch, because Mitch doesn't see it. He doesn't read it. He doesn't know it. They've got to give him a half field. They got to take away all these reads. They got to, you know, do the moving pocket. I don't think he wants that stuff. I think Nagy, in his heart of hearts, will say that if we can just get it blocked, Nick's going to be fine, and this thing's going to blow up.
I think that is completely plausible. I think there's almost a likelihood, I would say, that that is how he views things. They're still in the position, though, of needing to figure out who is the proper personnel for it. And that, to me, has been a struggle for this organization. It's been a struggle for Matt Nagy to accurately assess what suits his personnel, the guys he had, the guys who have been brought in by Ryan Pace, who are sitting in his locker room, and then to assess, how do I set them up best for success? That has not been a strong suit for Matt Nagy, and specifically on the offensive side. It's an odd thing, because that is obviously what his specialty was coming in here, but it wasn't like this odd thing or something from out of left field. Just in looking at what movement of the pocket did for Mitch, what tempo did for the offense, what the run game and gap schemes versus zone schemes and how even melding the two, how that could suit the offensive line in a different way than how they were operating. And the amount of time it took him to get to that point is obviously a very big negative on the resume of his time here in Chicago. And this offseason, I think, in a similar fashion to what last offseason was spent as in trying to assess how do the Bears, especially on offense, get more to what suits their players. You can make a case they have to do something similar on the defensive side as well. But just sticking with Nagy on the offensive side, he attempted that, and there were some elements of that early in the season, but it still didn't go all the way there. And so now he'll have to determine whether or not he is willing to fully commit to just saying, I'm going to try and run a system that just works best for Mitch, because that is the collective best opportunity at wins and losses, regardless of just trying to develop a quarterback, especially specifically to develop a quarterback for his system. That's kind of too selfish a way to look at it right now. And frankly, it would be a way to look at it that's detrimental to him and to his job security here in Chicago. He needs to take a more macro look at this beyond his system and say, here are my guys, here's my roster. At whatever point that's determined in any definitive fashion in the offseason, once you figure out what's happening with A-Rob and everything else, here are my guys. How do I put them in a position for success? Not me and my play calling, not me and my comfort, but where does their success, what's that lane look like?
You just hit the nail on every head, I think, that was around. More housework for you. Nicely done. But you brought up where I get in a circle about this, which is, yeah, if you have an above replacement level quarterback, I think that the OG Matt Nagy offense works. However, the other part of the circle on the other side is where I say a coach's job is to win games. And if you're not winning games because your system doesn't work, you have to adjust to the personnel you have. This is a quintessential NFL argument. People have this everywhere. But
yeah,
this
we've lived
really
it.
Illustrates. Yeah. But everybody dies. Every city I've lived in, this has been a problem. Unless you're like the Houston Texans and you have Deshaun Watson and you just want to ruin that dude's career by putting nobody around him in the worst offensive line I've ever seen. But you're laughing, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
But you put Deshaun Watson in Matt Nagy's OG offense that he came here to create, everything's great. But you have to also make the adjustments, though.
Right. And with the system that as it was born from, you know, the current Andy Reid system, what he's doing in Kansas City, no doubt. I mean, it's why it's really, really odd and in some ways frustrating why Eric Bieniemy isn't topping the list, you know, for some of the teams here, because he has obviously been right there at the belly mm-hmm. of this offensive system for a number of years now. But even within that system that Matt Nagy tried to run for a couple of seasons while he was here, there still is the sequencing of plays and the understanding of your personnel in those moments. So I think the system itself, like the book of plays, there's no doubt it is a proven success story in the NFL as Andy Reid and his proteges have gone on to run it. I would still need to see Matt Nagy prove that he can sequence plays properly in a game. So I think the book of plays is awesome. The play caller still has a role to operate within that. And so, you know, you still have a Deshaun Watson sort of example where that's what I try to remind Bears fans of a lot. There's only a few quarterbacks in the league that are capable of thriving, not just surviving, but thriving regardless of their surrounding circumstances, regardless of their coach, regardless of the way the plays are called, regardless of the personnel, regardless of the slings and arrows from the fan base. There's only a few of those dudes alive. And Mitch isn't one of them, but it doesn't mean the Bears couldn't have done more winning, not high-level winning, not elite-level winning, not Green Bay Packers-level winning, but one more with Mitch up to this point. And so that's what they have to figure out. If they bring Mitch back, it's got to be within a certain framework of system and personnel. If they move on from Mitch, I didn't guarantee him a damn thing. If you get Matt Ryan in here, if you get Matthew Stafford in here, they're both much better quarterbacks than Mitch. The coaching, the sequencing of plays, the scheming, the personnel, all those things will still need to be executed at a higher level if the Bears are going to be able to achieve at a much higher level than they have.
There's a lot of really good quarterbacks still alive in these playoffs as we look at what some people consider, some NFL fans think this is the best week of NFL football, better than the conference championships, better than Super Bowl week, just because of the number of good teams and exciting games that we have. Games you'll hear right here on The Score, by the way, both Saturday and Sunday. And there are quarterbacks to discuss. There are matchups and lessons to be learned. And we will do that with Anthony Herron when we come back after a brief timeout. So don't go anywhere. You have The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Part of playing quarterback is thinking, and the other part is reacting. So I'm going to think when I need to think, and I'm going to react when I need to react. I've seen a lot of looks over the years. This is definitely unique in some ways. They're very well coached. They got a good scheme. They play some umbrella on the back end, keep a lot of things in front of them. They're very good tacklers, a lot of vision to the football, really good pass rush, obviously generational talent in Aaron Donald inside, but a lot of really good players as well on that front in the second and third level too. So, you know, just got to go out, trust your instincts, trust what you've seen during the week, and be ready to react.
Aaron Rodgers putting it pretty matter-of-factly, going up against Brandon Staley, the former Bears assistant, and his multifaceted defense. He will think and he will react. Green Bay and the Rams. We've got Baltimore at Buffalo is the other Saturday game, and then Sunday, Cleveland at Kansas City, Tampa Bay at New Orleans. Anthony Herron is with us on the Bernstein and Rahimi show. And I have to say, just my observation for the guy I've really enjoyed watching so far, man, Josh Allen is really remarkable. I tweeted this when I saw it. I mean, for somebody to be that good an athlete with that kind of elite arm talent and speed of release, that there was a touchdown he threw to Stephon Diggs that I swear to you, you could do a side-by-side. And my video skills are not good enough to do this, but I would have. You could do a side-by-side of a classic Marino to Duper pattern and touchdown. That's what it looked like to me. Like, I had an immediate flashback seeing how quickly the ball got out of his hand and just how it made it seem so simple to throw to a guy that open because he saw exactly when the route was going to break. But he is a fun player to watch.
He's a phenom, and he's a guy. Like, I was on during the national championship game the other night. I was on the air. I was talking to Jordan Palmer, who works with Josh Allen, and he trains a lot of quarterbacks going through the draft process every year. And he was talking to me about, essentially, because the big concern that I had, that a lot of folks had when Josh Allen came out, was that he wasn't that accurate a passer in college. So we tend to see guys who, like Jake Locker, who got like huge arms and get away
with
it.
Kyle Bowler. Yep.
Right. Then you get to the league and you have to be accurate, and you normally don't see someone progress with their accuracy after they hit the professional level. And in addition to working with Jordan Palmer, but I think the infrastructure of the Bills organization, the way that they've just kind of groomed him steadily along and not asked too much of him. Like last season, I would tweet on NFL weekends, like, the Bears were asking Mitch to kind of do everything in their offense, and the Bills were asking Josh Allen to be like their short yardage fullback and to occasionally complete some passes, but it won for them as a formula, and just kind of every season they've given him more, to the point where now we see him as this MVP candidate this year, and his game has progressed every season. Part of that is that infrastructure I was talking about in the prior segment that hasn't been there to develop a Bears quarterback, and Josh Allen has become a guy who can achieve amongst the highest level in the industry. You know, certainly still more consistency required there, but the dude's, what, in three years in the league or whatever. So you anticipate that should still continue improving. But yeah, it's nice to watch when an organization adds talent around a young quarterback, says, yes, we're going to have a run game for a young quarterback, puts a system in place that suits their skill set, and doesn't ask too much of them early in their career unless they're confident they can handle it. Like, in Cincinnati, Joe Burrow looks like he can handle a lot. So, cool. Have at it. Josh Allen couldn't early. They didn't overcook his grits. And now we see every season he's gotten much, much better as a quarterback.
It's so true about the grits and about Josh Allen. I saw the stat on his completion numbers. He's jumped 10% in completion rate.
Man.
From this year to last year. He's up 10%. That is wild.
Right, right. And the, you know, you obviously have to have the talents as a student, but then obviously, well, while you're the pupil, you need to be able to carry that out on the field of play. Well, while folks are flying around, you're trying to take your legs out and try to close throwing windows on you and all those things, and still be able to process the information that's given by the coverage and by the fronts and everything, but still keep those new mechanics that you've been working on and be better with your balance and with your footwork and with your delivery, your release point. That last tip of the finger is what Jordan Palmer was talking to me about the other night, where just Josh Allen just guiding the ball better and everything from the ground working itself up through the upper body and all the way out through the arm. But when you've been doing it a certain way and doing it, you know, less efficiently for so long, then you tend to see things erode. Like with Mitch. Mitch can work all the great mechanics he wants on the practice field or whatever he's working on in the offseason. We tend to see those erode or break down in game, and that's part of what holds back his progress. Now, could you make the case maybe he's not getting coached well enough? Maybe that could be part of it, but then at a certain point, the mortality of Mitch's career and his time as a starter is what ends up getting affected by it. So either he needs to figure it out or those in the organization need to figure it out. But I think that's a good juxtaposition as an example that I've been using for a few seasons. Now, we'll see. You know, maybe the Ryan Tannehill thing ends up being an example for Mitch. But right now, because of the structure that's been there for Buffalo, it's a thing of beauty when Josh Allen throws the ball and they bring in Stephon Diggs. And while the Buffalo defense got worse this season, okay, they've had enough to get by, and their offense is just uber explosive. But the great defense they did have was able to be something sustaining for them earlier in Josh Allen's career, just like was the case with Russell Wilson earlier in his Seattle career, where they didn't ask too much of him within the offense. And year by year that progressed, he got to a point where they said, you know what, we'll invest in him financially. The defense is going to get a little worse, but they allowed him to ascend to that point where the scales could tip in that direction, as they tend to have to.
I've told this story before, but one of my earliest sports memories, one of my earliest memories, is watching Johnny Unitas in his final NFL season as a member of the Chargers, because I was told to remember it. And I'll never forget my dad saying, remember you saw that's Johnny Unitas. So always remember that you saw Johnny Unitas play. Hmm. Johnny Unitas on that day in 1973, when I was 4 years old, he was 40. He was 40. Drew Brees is 42. Tom Brady is 43. They'll take the field against each other on Sunday. I want you to take Bishop. I want you to put Bishop's nose right up against that TV screen. And you tell him, remember, you saw these guys play, because he will.
And he'll say, Daddy, is this football or basketball? I'll say, well, it's football, son. They're really old. They're both somehow even older than Daddy. Like, Daddy played against both these guys. But, yeah, this is them playing football in their weird tight pants. But for both those guys, there's a common trait to each of them. Well, obviously, in stature, they're different. And in overall accolades, maybe they're still a little bit different. Both first ballot Hall of Famers, though. For Tom Brady, his career arc was obviously well documented and got him to the point, but obviously he was a guy early in his career where things were spoon-fed a little bit. The offense didn't generate only through him. He had that opportunity to progress, to become the record-setting quarterback that he ended up becoming as a passer. And Drew Brees, you know, kind of went through the ringer a little bit from the Chargers into the Saints and found the coach and the organization. And his career could be even greater if not for, you know, some really odd playoff defeats that they've suffered, especially here in recent years. Like, as he got into his late 30s and early 40s have been some of his best teams, as his football productivity started to diminish a bit. But the organizational structure overall, what Sean Payton has been able to accomplish as a coach within his system, within the way he runs that team, hadn't mattered if Drew Brees has been in the lineup or not. I mean, they're better with Drew on the field, but they're still a damn good football team with Taysom Hill at quarterback, or last season with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. They probably would have been even better with Jameis Winston at quarterback than they were with Taysom Hill at quarterback this season, but it hasn't mattered because of top to bottom the structure of the organization. I don't know how many other football guys maybe outrank Sean Payton in the building, but it hasn't mattered because they have the right people in place. They know what their model of football is, and they structurally are so sound and consistent with it. There's a lot of teams who would love to be able to have that level of structure in place, that base that's there in New Orleans. It's difficult to get there, and there's no reason to think it won't continue, assuming this is Drew Brees' last season.
Yeah, it's funny. We all know about Taysom Hill, but I think it says more about how willing Sean Payton is to actually develop multiple weapons in an offense than it does knowing Taysom Hill's skill set. And he's stuck with it, just like he has with his other players.
It takes a level of confidence as a coach to be willing to do that in the midst of. I mean, whether it's, you know, because you think you got the job security to give it a try, because there's no way he's looking at Taysom Hill throw the football on the practice field and say, yeah, all right, I'll start him behind center. He gives us a better chance to win games than Jameis Winston does. like Jameis Winston is a pure passer, one of the more talented passers in football. Now, yes, he throws it to the other team also, but not a whole lot of guys walking around throwing for 5,000 yards in an NFL season. You don't look at those two on the practice field and say Taysom Hill is the one who gives us a better opportunity to win. But a couple of things. One, all right, maybe there's an agreement in place with Taysom Hill because of bringing him back there and the amount of money you pay him. If Drew goes down, Taysom, you're going to be the guy. So maybe there were promises that were made there. But you still have to be willing to do that through the lens of still planning to win games with that. And that's a level of confidence that Sean Payton had in his system, and I suppose in Taysom Hill as well, but in how he could utilize Taysom Hill and the defense that he has there, that he's got Dennis Allen running for him, and saying we can still win legit NFL games with that guy at quarterback. And Taysom Hill obviously made enough plays, but through the lens of what Sean Payton accomplishes within his offensive system, it just goes to show how confident he feels. Like, you know, we were talking about Matt Nagy earlier. Most coaches and most play callers go in with confidence. Not all of them carry it out to the same extent as what we see in New Orleans.
Well, they go in with – the problem with Nagy is he keeps up the confidence even if the play isn't working. You know, that's like, you can be, it's one thing to say like, my plan works. And then despite the fact that in front of you is actual evidence of it not working, you fail to read that. You know, that's what's always bothered me about him. Now, meanwhile, we've got Cleveland at Kansas City. Cleveland is a 10-point dog at the moment. What would have to happen for them to pull an upset of upsets?
Flat tire for Mahomes. I don't know. I guess even a flat tire, put his thumb out in the air. I'm sure folks would probably pick him up. That wouldn't do it. Yeah, man. I mean, they gotta have like a 3-1 clock advantage. 2-1 ain't gonna get it done because Kansas City, when they're humming, they can score that quickly. But it has to be just full on Browns mode of just, we are going to take all the air out of the football, and you are going to have no opportunities to get Mahomes on the field. You throw some fourth downs in there too, because you're not just trying to play field position. I know the Chiefs have played some close games this season, so they're not just this, you know, the scales of football have been tipped towards offense. Like Kansas City, they'll run the ball, they'll play some close type football games, but here in the postseason, what your game plan is, what your mentality is going in if you're Cleveland, is not, if we get into a shootout, it's cool. Not, hey, let's throw it a lot on first down if we have to. It is through the lens of you know, limiting the exposure of Baker Mayfield to potentially mess the game up, but more importantly, to do what you can to keep Patrick Mahomes off the field and make sure you're controlling things as much. And they have the type of ground attack that can do that. And they have a mentality, a willingness on offense to deploy that type of game plan. I think they need to stick with it. Even if Kansas City gets up by 7-10 points at some point in the first half, maybe even in the third quarter, you continue to do what you can to just try to ground your way through that game, see if your defensive front can do what, you know, it got to the point, obviously, here in Chicago where everybody's hoping like that Bears defensive front could tilt the scales of the game in some way, and it didn't happen as frequently down the stretch of the season. Cleveland still has a D-line that is able to play at that level and personnel up front to do it. So I think you try to see if you can just ground the clock into dust and don't let it come to a standstill. It's got to be churning, and as long as that clock's churning, then you got a chance late.
I ain't never scared. I do think Baker Mayfield should be scared of Tyrann Mathieu.
Like, and you know what?
Honey,
you know,
Badger's going to be smelling interception.
Baker Mayfield may be a bit of a bag, but I have to say, grudgingly, he's a really good comic actor. He is a level above the typical athlete. You know, Peyton Manning's good.
Bigger commercials, yeah.
But the problem is Peyton Manning has now gone like full Leslie Nielsen, where previously like he was really funny because he was underplaying, and then he started to feel himself a little bit, and now he's kind of overplaying. I give Baker Mayfield, he puts in the way, or he's really also well directed, but those commercials and his work in those commercials is on the range of athlete, untrained actor. He's really polished. He's really good.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, you know, you look at some of the police video from when he was in college. He had a couple of one-liners even with the cops, so there were some zingers going on there too. So, yes, he seems to be a guy with comedic timing. And I'll say this, man, because I would even, you know, debate folks on other shows around the country as Baker was coming out through the draft process. Some folks were kind of underplaying the physical talents of Baker Mayfield just because he's kind of, you know, diminutive in stature. And he's got a big enough arm but not a huge arm. And he's mobile enough, but he's not super mobile. He's got more, like Johnny Manziel had more than enough physical attributes to work as a professional quarterback. Baker certainly does as well. And the talents he has, not just sheer arm strength like we were talking about with Josh Allen earlier, but the talents he has as a passer, the ability to turn the nose of the football over in a very short window. Like he can pull the string on some passes. He's a talented guy from that regard. My big issue with Baker Mayfield the entire time was, will he mature to the extent that a guy needs to mature to be consistent as a leader, as a purveyor of NFL offenses? And that's where he's taken a big stretch, a big step. He's not worried about going on social media and debating with analysts about what's going on with his team. He's not getting mouthy with the media afterwards. And those elements don't have to matter if you're able to stay locked in and focused on things. But he, throughout his time in college and throughout the initial years of his time as a professional, seemed keenly concerned on like proving something about the bravado that is Baker Mayfield. He seems a lot less concerned with that. And I think that plays itself out between the white lines as well, where he doesn't play the quarterback position as though it's about Baker Mayfield proving something. It's about running the play that's called, staying within the confines of the X's and O's, handing the football off a bunch. But when there are plays available to be made, he is more than talented enough to make them without, you know, sort of taking these odd chances that he sometimes seemed he felt he needed to take to prove something that wasn't necessary there. And I think his maturity off the field, his maturity with the media, his maturity just in how he carries himself, to me, seems to be playing out with actually the way he operates as a quarterback too.
He was like that in high school too, just for the record. Same dude, because I covered him when he was in high school, like Travis. Yeah. And we were like, who's this sophomore who thinks he's all that?
Right.
And he's backed it up.
And I think it's fun to watch. You know, I root for players to be able to mature the position, to have growth there, and to have success. And he is definitely having success at this point. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to beat Kansas City, but between the Cleveland Browns, their fan base, what they're doing as an organization, it's fun to watch the way that things are ascending right now. And they're in a position where maybe over the next few seasons, they're a legit threat. Maybe a year from now, they're the Buffalo Bills. I could be underselling them. Maybe they're this year's Buffalo Bills. I don't know. But I feel like maybe a year from now, the Browns could be in that similar discussion of how we saw the Bills play out this year.
Anthony, thank you as always. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking next time. It's going to be an exciting weekend of football. And like I'm saying, let make sure Bishop knows that that's Tom Brady, that's Drew Brees, and he should remember it.
He gets to look at this photo of me sacking Tom Brady all the time, and his mom's a Patriots fan, so she always tells me, yeah, that's that Brady guy that the daddy sacked that time, so he sees enough of that. There's the goofy picture of me jumping trying to block a Drew Brees, so he's seen enough of it. He probably won't be watching a lot of football, but regardless of that, I will, so thank you. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, Big Ant. Appreciate it. We have the Midday Midway coming up next. I have the amazing saga of Joe the Pigeon.
I, too, had the amazing saga of Joe the Pigeon.
All right. I will leave you with Joe. You can take Joe the Pigeon. Connor and I used to do this all the time. So I will leave you with Joe the Pigeon, and I am going to give another example of the furtherance of one of my longstanding crusades. How about that?
I'm good with it, but I also think that Joe the Pigeon deserves his own segment entirely. So whichever prefer.
If you would, then that's fine. Then we should devote the entire segment to the saga of Joe the Pigeon. If it was both top of mind for both of us, see how these things work. That's perfect. That's next on the score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
We spent much of this show talking about football. We went over what George McCaskey did on his little damage control tour yesterday. He didn't really stanch the bleeding, unfortunately, and I'm told that the Bears phone lines and social media are lighting up this morning with all kinds of criticism, the likes of which they haven't seen in a long time, and frankly, I think they deserve it. We also played the words of Colts general manager Chris Ballard, who could have been the Bears general manager, as we compared and contrasted the way he says stuff with the way Ryan Pace says stuff, and then Anthony Heron hung out for a while. You take it.
Aw. Well, learning the style of the Midday Midway, this checked a lot of boxes for me, so I shouldn't be surprised that you, Dan, also had the same idea. When I saw the headline, Australia, checkbox, authorities investigate the case of Joe the Pigeon, investigating a pigeon, another box is checked, who could be euthanized after being deemed a biosecurity risk. Well, this just hit too many bells for me on the Midday Midway box checking list. Here's the story. Joe the Pigeon showed up in an Australian residential backyard on Boxing Day, aka the 26th, and is believed to be an American racing pigeon that journeyed across the ocean on a ship. His arrival caused current concern for Australia's agricultural department, who see him as a biosecurity risk to their native fauna and flora. We all know pigeons take over things. Joe made headlines internationally when it was announced that he was set to be destroyed. What an awful word. But the department has since said it is exploring the possibility of, quote, the re-export of the pigeon to the U.S., end quote. In a new development, the American Racing Pigeon Union, there's a union for racing pigeons, has suggested that Joe the Pigeon is an Australian bird and that the blue tag on his leg is counterfeit. Somebody took the time to make the tag on his leg counterfeit? What? Australia's agricultural department said Joe's case is currently being investigated.
Now, the details in this are what get me. Because, first of all, how seriously Australia takes its biosecurity risks. And I understand because it's an island and because they do have, because there's been unique evolution there, that they mm-hmm. want to keep it sort of sacrosanct. However, it's also a place where all of that evolution has created almost all of the things on a planet that can kill you. They have all of it. They've got all the different super venomous snakes. They've got a ton of great white sharks. They have that blue-ringed octopus. We've been through them before, of all the things there. And you know, kangaroos will kick your ass, too. Make no mistake about it. And this led to another story that I didn't know, at least down in the AP copy. I didn't know about this. But Australian quarantine authorities are notoriously strict. In 2015, the government threatened to destroy two Yorkshire Terriers, Pistol and Boo, after they were smuggled into the country by Hollywood star Johnny Depp and his ex-wife Amber Heard. Faced with a 50-hour deadline to leave Australia, the dogs made it out in a chartered jet. This sounds like, they make it sound like the climax of the movie Argo, where you had the hostages who were getting out of Tehran on a jet and just trying to leave the airspace before they could come after them. Fabulous movie, by the way. Absolutely tremendous movie. And but you know, you picture that. Like, they say the dogs made it out. Like, they had some idea. But I wasn't aware until I saw this story of just how seriously they take this. How do they know? Like, what? How perfect do the borders have to be of every ship and every plane to know what's coming in and going out?
Well, I'll tell you this much. It just sounds like they have a bunch of people who know how to do their jobs.
Yeah, right? That's a luxury.
That's a concern everywhere in the United States. We also care about that stuff. We're just not very good at catching it because people don't care all that much. They don't care. The murder hornets, for example, Asian carp ring a bell. That's the terror of a lot of people when it comes to boating in that situation. But like, and fishing for that matter. But yeah, it sounds like in Australia, they just actually care about their ecosystem and their jobs and want to do them. And Johnny Depp and Amber Heard sound entitled. And have you heard anything about that whole divorce proceeding? Every now and then it comes across my social media feed and I keep saying the same thing. This is a mess. But I feel so bad for this innocent pigeon. And why did somebody counterfeit a tag and put it on his leg?
I don't understand that either of what why it would have. And I think the tag said it was from Alabama, but that was a fake tag. And I want to know more about like the Racing Pigeon Union. Do they race in an arena, or is it like a long distance race where they like carrier pigeons? How does one race pigeons?
No, that's the Racist Pigeon Union.
Different union, the Racist Pigeon Union. And this, because it always plays in too, because you should know about me that at some point in my life, at least I may take a day to do this with someone else, I want to try falconry. I am absolutely obsessed. I have a thing for birds of prey. You'll learn about me in some of these stories as well, as far as checking boxes on here. Eating insects, that's another one. Birds of prey. But I have a kinship with owls and hawks and eagles and ospreys, etc. And the people who train them to do their bidding, to go out into farmland and capture game birds and rabbits for their consumption, there's something just so ancient and wonderful about it. And if you want to, I'll eat pigeons too, because they're delicious. I have had them here. I've had them in Italy and in France, and I love a good squab. So if at some point I can combine this, I'll be more than happy to destroy a pigeon for my own sake.
Bacon wrapped dove was the closest I got to all that. It was pretty good.
Like the dove breast, they do that around here. I mean, hunters will do that. That I haven't had.
Yeah, dove season starts September 1st in Texas, and they're everywhere. And I don't like them being killed much either. But bacon wrapped dove is pretty good. What'd you say?
That's a thing where they only use the breast, right? And you're supposed to cook it like medium rare, I think. And then do they roast it? Do they deep fry it? How do they cook it with the bacon?
I don't know. I just got it offered to me one time when I was filming a high school football game for our Friday night TV show. And I was like, sure, I'll try this. It's homecoming. You're fancy. Bacon wrapped dove. Let's go.
So I'm just imagining an actual full dove wrapped in bacon.
Live, right?
Live, yes.
Right.
So here's my question about this. Do you remember when the raccoon climbed the building in Minnesota a while back?
Yeah.
Do you remember how much effort we all made emotionally toward this raccoon?
Yes.
We felt the same way about this pigeon.
I guess. I don't know. There's something a little more easy to anthropomorphize about a raccoon than there is a pigeon, perhaps.
No, I feel like it's they both did a lot of work. And you don't want things that do a lot of work to, like, die. That sucks.
Yeah, it sounds like we're probably going to be okay, because as I'm sort of relying on the crack research department here, as they would say in the Compound Podcast, that it looks like they're confident enough that it may be an Australian pigeon that it looks like he's going to get a reprieve. But you're right about the Johnny Depp thing. I don't even want to go down that road with all like the abuse claims and everything that's going on there, and his and how just how drunk he was all the time. And that's really rocky.
That fellow sounds like he thinks he's above the law. Same with that dog he had too. Two of them, whatever.
Yes. And I'm laughing about it because you know you say here that the people don't even know how to do their jobs. Half of these animals are in the cabin of the plane as comfort animals. You know, this people could have like their emotional security pigeon. People brought a peacock, and they were for up until a month ago, they were letting them on the plane, in the plane, not even in the cargo hold, sitting on somebody's lap.
Please, please, somehow, I need you to go to the airport and say, "This is my emotional security pigeon."
Well.
Also, every time you talk about the Falcon, I just think about the cute little masks they wear.
Oh, the things that go over their head? You know, like, the helmets.
Yeah, the hood, obviously. But like the little, like the whole little device where they're like, oh, I'm awake now. I'll go
now
fly
we're back
away.
To the and racist you know, the bald pigeons. Eagles.
The racist pigeon union.
Not that kind of hood. There was that bald eagle who tried to land on James Paxton a bunch because he thought he was a tree.
Yeah, and he didn't panic either. I give him credit because that's pretty scary. That's a big animal with big sharp talons, and he did not panic, and I was impressed.
And his nickname is Big Maple, and he's Canadian. And I was like, this is America coming at you, James Paxton, whether you like it or not. Here you go. Yeah.
Right, or it's like a superhero origin story. That if the radioactive talon pierces him enough, he becomes Eagle Man.
Eagle Man?
Yeah, that is the Midday Midway. And we do it many days around 10:40 or so. Next up, Robert Mays.
I've got
Mays.
Something for you.
See, Dan, she didn't together. Even grow up here, and she knows Eagle
yeah, right.
Man.
That's the local commercial of Eagle Man. Is it still running?
I don't think so.
No, but you know that Adam Burrish and Patrick Sharp did the Eagle Man commercial for the Blackhawks, right?
No, they did?
It's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Okay, I'll YouTube
it
that.
Must be Eagle Man.
Okay, I'm going to check that out. Robert Mays is going to join us next. He writes NFL stuff and talks NFL stuff for The Athletic. He'll join us when we come back on The Score.
I've got something for you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.